Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. It has been a busy week already, and it is just Wednesday, the week ahead of the PGA Championship. Rex is in Charlotte. I'm in Stamford, Connecticut, co-hosting golf today. And Rex, before we get into your conversation with the Masters champion, Roy McIlroy, who's back to work after his triumph at Augusta, before we get into the player meeting that was held at Quail Hall on Tuesday as well, we have to start once again with Liv. And there's been plenty of attention, not just on the CEO, Scott O'Neill, who met with the media earlier this week in Virginia, but also John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau. Let's start with John Rahm, who I think is at least the biggest newsworthy item of the week so far. And that was John Rahm agreeing to a deal with the DP World Tour. He's going to be paying the outstanding fines. In exchange, he will be playing five tournaments on the European Tour this year, but it also makes him eligible for the 2027 European Ryder Cup team. What's your biggest takeaway from what has been about a year-long saga at this point with John Rahm and the European Tour no longer at a stalemate?
It was an interesting convergence yesterday, because I think this is a testament to how dramatically the landscape has changed the last 3 weeks. Like, you don't have to go too far back to hear John Rahm talking about a potential deal that would allow him to play both the DP World Tour and LIV Golf without any sanctions. They've been able to do it, they being the players from Europe, and they've been able to play both tours for quite a while now, but they've been fined. Every time they go off and play a LIV Golf event without having a proper media release, they get fines. And for John Rahm, those fines built up to a little over $1 million. So it was a significant amount of money. And he called the deal that allowed eight other players to go back and essentially play both tours with no sanctions. It allowed them to get sort of, I think the way it was described was conditional releases to play in both events. He described that as extortion earlier this year. He clearly did not like the deal. He clearly wanted to draw a line in the sand. And you look at where they finally landed yesterday with the news and the way the DP World Tour explained it, it's not too much different than the same deal that those eight players took. I think essentially the only difference would have been, instead of having to play six European Tour events outside of the majors, he had to play five. Essentially, the decision was they prorated him one because they're so deep into the season. They're about halfway through their season right now, but the fines still had to be paid. The DP World Tour is still going to decide where he's going to play those extra European Tour events. And I think this speaks to, he doesn't have a lot of options. I think a lot of players on LIV Golf are starting to look around, look at themselves in the mirror and decide, you know what? What's next for me? Maybe Scott O'Neill is able to piece something together. Maybe LIV Golf survives beyond 2026. And I think that's a very real possibility. And maybe it doesn't. And I think anybody in a very similar situation would do the exact same thing, where you're trying to figure out what the next step is for me professionally. For John Rahm, I think he finally came to the realization that that's not a hill I want to die on.
But why was he even dying on this hill over the past year, as opposed to just sort of throwing his weight around and trying to bend the European Tour to his will? Like, my biggest takeaway was, what took so long? It makes sense for the DP World Tour. And in this case, although they reduced the number of tournaments that he's going to be required to play from six to five, as you mentioned, it was simply prorated. He's going to have to play plenty in the fall. They didn't back down in this scenario. They got what they wanted, and that was John Rahm in their tournaments, helping fortify those tournaments, which could be boosted with some star power, not just John Rahm, but Tyrrell Hatton and the like as well. And as you mentioned, this was necessary for John Rahm as well. I don't think it was any coincidence that this deal was struck in the days immediately following the news officially that the Saudi PIF was going to be pulling out of LIV Golf following the conclusion of the 2026 season. John Rahm needed a guaranteed place to play if LIV Golf folds after 2026 and the European Tour offers that. I did think there was also one other interesting thing, Rex, with John Rahm's press conference, was him admitting that he has, quote, several years left on his LIV deal. And this one in particular, quote, "I don't see many ways out." That's not necessarily a ringing endorsement for John Rahm's future on LIV. There's certainly a scenario, and it would be delicious to many golf fans who felt spurned by John Rahm leaving the PGA Tour to jump for LIV, if all of a sudden they're competing not for $30 million purses, but $5 to $10 million purses, and John Rahm is contractually obligated to be there.
I think it is funny. And look, our favorite conspiracy theorist is sitting next to you this week. And he's brought it up now a couple of times on golf today. I'm talking about Eamon Lynch, of course. Imagine the purgatory that John Rahm is going to be in over the lifetime of the contract. So it was a 5-year deal, assuming this is the second year of that contract, I believe, where he has to play in 14 events next season for $2 million purses. It's a less glorified version of the Corn Ferry Tour, because I can't imagine they're going to better golf courses.
It's not going to be $2 million purses. Come on. I can see a scenario where it's 5 to 10.
If you look at the economics right now of what LIV Golf is, based on the income they have, based on whatever it is they can find for private equity as far as investment, it's not going to be anywhere near $20 million, $25 million, $30 million, which is where their purse structure is right now. You're looking at something dramatically less. Whatever it is, you're right. Maybe $2 million is too much on the low side. But you're John Rahm. According to John Rahm, by his own accounts, no, the contract's pretty lock solid. Their lawyers are very good when it comes to these types of things. And he doesn't see a way out. I think the best case scenario for John Rahm is that LIV just folds up. And I think that's probably the best case scenario for a lot of players who may be looking over their shoulder and thinking to themselves that maybe I need to move on from this. By all accounts, some players aren't. Bryson DeChambeau, and we're going to get into his comments, I'm guessing here in a moment, has been pretty clear about, no, man, I like team golf. I like it over here. This is the future for me. I feel like John Rahm is stuck squarely in the middle right now. I think he tried to do the right thing as best he could and adhere to the contract and try to say all the right things. But now there's just no wiggle room for him. He has to make it clear that, yeah, this isn't what's best for my career at the moment.
It certainly is not. And just to go back to this deal, Rex, like, how much goodwill do you think that John Rahm has squandered just by dragging out this saga that could have been a race with a simple stroke of the pen? Over the past year, you've had European captain Luke Donald, you've had European stalwarts Roy McIlroy, Justin Rose, pleading with Rahm, you know, urging him, just pay your fines, put this issue behind him. You have now some reporting out of Europe and those who are at the European Tour events sort of polling the membership, and it certainly seems split, where, yes, we understand the need and the want to bring John Rahm into these tournaments to help boost them. They also sort of want to have him pay a steeper price. Particularly after John Rahm said the European Tour was trying to extort the players with this deal of having it both ways. I guess overall, do you think there are relationships that need to be repaired? Or do you think when we get to Adair Manor, they're just going to be happy to have one of the best players in the world on their side?
No, I think the European team is excellent, brilliant, really good at putting all those differences aside once every 2 years. Everyone seems to think it's a big love fest in that team room every 2 years. I'll go back a few years when I've heard stories about players screaming at each other, wives fighting each other inside the team room. There's plenty of personalities, and you and I work with a lot of people. Some of them you like, some of them I don't like. They may or may not be named Ryan Lavner, but you do your job and you go out and you do it as best you can. And I think by and large, they'll find a way to make it work, only because they've done it before. And we all know Luke Donald is brilliant. He'll pull all the right strings. He'll make it work. I think it's important to point out, you mentioned the fines, and I'll get to what is essentially your question about, are they going to be welcome back? It's important to point out that John Rahm had about $1.3 or $1.4 million in fines that he had to pay. All but about $300,000 of that was paid by the Public Investment Fund. That was the agreement. The Public Investment Fund paid almost all of them through the end of last season. So the only fines that John Rahm had to pay out of his own pocket, well, whatever he accrued. That one
accrued. There
accrued,
it is.
Thank you very much.
The Bayou.
This season. The Bayou. See, we all stumble from time to time. Was this season. So I'm not saying that's a small amount of money, but if you're John Rahm, it's not a lot.
It is.
And the fact that he was fighting over essentially what boiled down to one event and let's say roughly $300,000, I think that rubbed people, at least in Europe, the wrong way. Why would you not just do this? You look at what Brooks Koepka has done to come back to the PGA Tour. By comparison, the PGA Tour's returning member program was downright punitive. Brooks Koepka had to pay essentially a $5 million fine to charity, but a fine nonetheless. Didn't get into the biggest events. Essentially, he is dictated to play the smaller events, just like this week at Myrtle Beach, where he's playing the opposite field event here, the signature event here in Charlotte. So by comparison, it didn't make much sense. And I can see why there's probably plenty of people, players, on the European Tour that just don't like the idea that you were in a position of strength. I'm saying you, the European tour. When John Rahm came back, if you're a business person, why didn't you do what any other business person would have been? Sure. We'll gladly have you back. The number is now 8 events you have to play beyond the majors. The number is now you have to pay this much in fines. They didn't do that. They actually met him halfway, and I think that's probably what's ruffled some feathers.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And Rex, another player who technically would be eligible to play on the European Tour in 2027 by virtue of his win at the U.S. Open in 2024 is Bryson DeChambeau. And Bryson had a busy Tuesday. He was in the Oval Office telling kids about working hard. He was on the front lawn at the White House engaged in a push-up contest with 90-year-old Gary Player. But then he did make his way to the LIV event in Virginia, and he had some very interesting things to say to a handful of reporters, including our buddy, ESPN's Mark Schlabaugh, formerly known as Bulldog. And Bryson DeChambeau said that if he is not welcome back to the PGA Tour, he is planning, as he had suggested a couple months ago, a full-blown pivot to YouTube and being a content creator and only wants to play in tournaments that want him. Bryson went on to say that he wants to grow his YouTube channel about 3 times. He'd love to do a, quote, bunch of dubbing in different languages, giving the world more reason to watch YouTube. And then I'd love to play tournaments that want me. Do you believe that this is Bryson DeChambeau simply setting up a high-stakes game of chicken with the PGA Tour, which had already offered him a pathway back earlier this year through the returning member program?
We started this conversation talking about John Rahm's decision to circle back around and sign a contract that he said was extortion. He likened it to extortion, to a testament to the shifting landscape. It is a tectonic shift over the last 3 weeks, essentially, with the public investment fund announcing they're pulling their funding of LIV Golf at the end of this year. That means, essentially, all of the leverage goes back to the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. I'm not quite sure what business school Bryson went to that he thinks in his mind that suddenly he has some form of leverage that he didn't before. First and foremost, he's assuming that the public that LIV Golf will be able to match his contract, which we have heard various reports, but we're looking at 9 figures, which his contract is due this year. It's hard to imagine how they're able to come up with that large of a sum of money without the public investment fund behind them. I will also say, and I'm speaking from now the PGA Tour side of this, I'm not quite sure how much he's going to be welcomed back given those types of comments. Brooks Koepka was an entirely different scenario. The returning member program gave him a pathway that was punitive, as I pointed out, and to a certain degree, it's kind of made you admit that I made a mistake. Now, I don't think Brooks has done that openly, publicly, since he joined the tour, but sitting on the porch in the darkness, in the wee hours in Hilton Head a few weeks ago, hoping to get into the RBC Heritage.
It shows that he wants to be there. Yeah,
exactly. And we're not getting that. The players aren't getting that version of John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau. I had this conversation last night with a player here at Quail Hollow. The idea being that of the 70-something players on LIV Golf, probably 20, maybe 25, actually probably want to come back to the PGA Tour. And I'm not even quite sure Bryson and John are in that conversation right now. Based on their actions and a lot of their comments, it doesn't seem like they are. Of those 20 or 25, how many does the PGA Tour really want back? One of the things I just heard in the locker room, which is interesting, instead of just reenacting the returning member program, essentially the program that brought back Brooks, if in fact John Rahm or Bryson or anyone else wants to come back, just tell them you need to come back. Like, there's going to be no fines. There's no suspensions. You have to play your way back. And I think that would weed out a lot of players that, A, probably can't compete on the PGA Tour anymore, and B, probably don't have the motivation to compete on the PGA Tour. I thought it was a brilliant solution, to be honest with you.
Well, that's interesting because although Bryson did not offer specifics, he did confirm that he has had conversations and he and his reps have had conversations with the PGA Tour and other tours about what a pathway back could look like generally. But I did think it was telling that he described what would be the potential punishment for the PGA Tour as, quote, quite unfortunate. Again, did not have specifics. That was not a monetary amount. That was not necessarily what his status was going to look like. It wasn't going to be, you know, being excluded from the equity program for 5 years plus, which is what Brooks Koepka's conditions were. He just called them quite unfortunate. And he said, especially considering what I could do for them. If you're the PGA Tour and you're hearing Bryson DeChambeau talk about sort of the one man entertainment show that he could bring to the PGA Tour. And he's talking about how the PGA Tour is not doing all that well either when you look at sort of their models and what could or could not be unsustainable purse increases. You look at sort of the trimming of the workforce that the larger PGA Tour has had to do as well. Those comments cannot sit well. And if he is setting up sort of this high stakes game of chicken, I'd be very curious to see if the PGA Tour might want to call his bluff. And if Bryson DeChambeau is actually genuinely content going down the YouTube route, and that's how he's going to be playing in the major championships until 2029, again, by virtue of that win at Pinehurst in 2024, let him. You know, that avenue might keep him fresh heading into the majors. It might be career suicide. Go ahead and find out and see if all of a sudden, after a year or two of being irrelevant on the world's biggest stage, if he's singing a little bit of a different tune.
Now, this is a conversation I had with a player yesterday here at Quail Hollow, and it was backed up by another player today, top 30 player. And this is a little morbid. This was his example, not mine, so please don't come after me on it. But this player said to me, if every player in the field this week at Quail Hollow, a signature event, was on a plane, and that plane crashed, and everyone died. Again, it's very morbid. This is not what I said. This is the player said this, but he's making a point. I was a little thrown by it as well. And he goes, the tour goes on. This isn't about us. This isn't about Bryson. It isn't about John or any of the other stars. It's the platform that carries on because it goes on from generation and decade and eons and era and over again. And I think there is something to be said for that right now. I think a lot of stars, even on the PGA Tour side, are probably coming around to that notion that the machine's going to keep going with or without me. I'd rather it go on with me, but they're not going to stop just because I stopped playing golf or something happened to me. I don't think Bryson DeChambeau is there yet. I don't think John Rahm is there yet, but it is a reality that I think most of the star players are coming around to.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. Like, would it be beneficial?
A dark reality. I'm sorry. I warned you. I did the parental guidance on this.
Plus, my goodness. Like, would it be very beneficial for the PGA Tour to bring those players back into the fold? Absolutely. Are the nuances and the politics of the situation pretty extreme and pretty significant? Yeah. I think they're two entirely different scenarios. This was John Rahm, who won the Masters back in 2023. Remember, they'd reached the framework agreement that summer. It was John Rahm who 6 months later decided to bolt for LIV, thinking that he could get paid and also be the unifying force to bring the two sides back together. Instead, it looks like he's in purgatory for the next couple of years, regardless of where LIV Golf is going to go. Bryson DeChambeau, remember, was public enemy number one at the end of 2021. Remember that BMW Championship where he's getting booed and he's getting taunted, and he's getting jeered by not just his fellow players, but also the fans. Like, it was ugly stuff. And what did Bryson DeChambeau do after bolting for LIV? He joined that lawsuit. I believe it was other 11 players in total, alleging that the PGA Tour was using anti-competitive practices to exclude some of the players. So I think it's an entirely different scenario. And now you have a player, Bryson, who's being antagonistic with how he's regarding the PGA Tour and certainly being a little bit egotistical in sort of viewing his importance. I'm with you. I don't think the PGA Tour needs to bring back these players. Would it be helpful? Would it be a boon? Certainly, sure, in the short term. But long term, where they are in their careers, what they can accomplish, can they be replaced over time? Yeah, I think since 2022, you've seen that these players can be replaced. I think it's a real dangerous avenue that that Bryson DeChambeau is trying to go to, essentially goading or taunting the PGA Tour to not bring them back, thinking there's going to be some sort of fan revolt if they're not brought back.
I had a boss a long time ago that gave me some very good advice. He said, don't ever ask a question you don't want to hear the answer to. And in this particular case, I think Bryson is going to ask a question he doesn't want to hear the answer to, that yes, the PGA Tour golf is going to move on without you. You can do whatever you want on YouTube, but unless you're playing the best players in the world on a regular basis, you're going to become an afterthought. And I think that applies to everyone, just not a LIV golfer. It would apply to a PGA Tour golfer just the same. So this isn't about the divide and golf. And I do think it is fascinating that in the situation they are in right now, where all the players on LIV are scrambling, trying to figure out what's next, for those two specifically to dig in, thinking that, no, they need me more than I need them. And that's simply not the case.
And look, our YouTube comment section is is not necessarily a microcosm of how golf fans feel at large. I was struck, not by how many people just read the headline, and we did the live draft, the live player draft, and most of them just said, we don't want them back. The people who did watch and were like, screw them. We don't need them. We don't want them. They chose live. The PGA Tour will go on. Again, this is not necessarily a microcosm of how golf fans feel at large, but I did think it was pretty telling. It was overwhelmingly, Rex, the sense and the sentiment is that we don't want these guys back. Let them go wither away in obscurity. Very, very interesting. How about the tournament that you're at, the Truist Championship, another signature event on the PGA Tour a week ahead of the PGA Championship? Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, is not in the field. He's at home getting ready for Ronimink. But Roy McIlroy is back to work, the first time we have seen him since his win at the Masters. You had an opportunity to speak with him earlier on Wednesday after his pro-am. How'd he look? How'd he sound?
He looked good. He was fun. He was a hoot. He was in good spirits. Obviously, coming off of the victory at the Masters has a tendency of doing that. He did tell me in the sound of run and golf today later when you and I are on, but the idea that this time felt different because I asked him, I don't imagine there's a learning curve when it comes to celebrations, but how was this time different versus last time when you won the Masters? And he said he was probably able to savor this one a little bit better, that you do learn how to make the most of the moment. He said everything last time around seemed to move really fast. It was hectic. He went back to Europe to visit his parents. They made some trips. They made some appearances. That wasn't the case this time around. He told a great story about flying home on Monday morning after the Masters. And his daughter, Poppy, has tennis lessons on Monday afternoon. And he was like, maybe we don't do the tennis lesson today. Maybe we can skip it.
Them. She's like, we'll bend them, he says.
Yep, we'll bend them. Nope, she wanted to go. And life goes on as normal. And I think that's one of the cool things about this. He also touched on the idea that you and I have addressed on numerous occasions, that another thing that he learned last time around is I'm not at the top of the mountain. That everyone seems to think so. You and I have fun sort of joking about it from time to time. And he goes, but I have a lot of my career left. I have a lot of things I still want to accomplish. He got back to work. I think this is going to be a great week to see him because of the success he has had on this golf course. I will say during his press conference, he was not asked a live question. He was not asked a John Rahm question. And it's a little, so this is pulling back the curtain a little bit. It's a little bit weird interviewing a player for Golf Channel after a press conference because they've usually been asked most of the questions that you would imagine. So you're trying to come up with maybe a different way to elicit a different response. But very rarely what I have anticipated going after a press conference this week, given everything that you and I just talked about with Rory McIlroy needing to fill in some blanks when it either comes to Liv Goff or John Rahm. And I was sort of stuck that not only he wasn't asked about either of them, and it's really not the format. I needed to ask him about coming back to this tournament. What's it like since winning the Masters last time? I needed to ask him about his relationship.
You got about three or four questions just for reference. Yeah.
And I get three with Rory because, again, pulling back the curtain a little bit, Rory talks long, like he gives good answers. So I would have loved to ask four questions, but then we're standing there for 5 or 6 minutes. And then I start getting dirty looks from a lot of people who were standing around waiting for him. So that wasn't going to work out either. I opted for a John Rahm question because he has been outspoken about John Rahm, thinking that put your money where your mouth is. The European team said before Bethpage last year that we would play for free. We would pay to play in this event. Put your money where your mouth is. Like, pay your fine, come back to the European Tour, be part of the team, be part of what we're creating here. I think there was a level of relief from Rory, to be honest with you. I think he also recognizes the landscape that I just talked about, that it's not sure he has many options now going forward. The wall's kind of closed in on him a little bit. It's sort of hard to take a principal stand when your alternative is not having anywhere to play. So all of that was fascinating to me.
And I will be very curious to see if Rory was not asked in his pre-tournament press conference. Keep in mind, most national reporters, or at least some national reporters, are in Virginia this week for the LIV event. You also have a scenario with a major championship next week, which is obviously going to bring a huge global audience and media market as well. If Rory, during this signature event, will be asked about it on Thursday or Friday, keep in mind, Scottie Scheffler was asked a LIV question after his Thursday opening round at the Cadillac Championship last week, swatted away. I think Roy McIlroy will certainly be more eager to answer and delve into that sort of topic. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. We got to get back to work. Rex needs to go pound the pavement, get on the range, get some scoops for us for Golf Today and Golf Central. I'll be co-hosting Golf Today with Eamon Lynch later on this afternoon. We'll be back on Sunday for a Mother's Day edition of the podcast. It's not going to be the 52-minute edition. We'll have plenty to chew on with a PGA Championship preview, also recapping what happened in Virginia, as well as in Charlotte for the Truist Championship, another no-cut signature event on the PGA Tour. Right. In the meantime, you guys know the drill, golfchannel.com for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you guys on Mother's Day.
You and Amy getting along?